Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. Joining me now is Letitia James to talk about her first 100 days as New York City's public advocate. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, and good morning to you and your listeners.
And I'm so pleased to be able to talk with you, and especially now that you've had some time in this job.
Yeah.
So let's begin by talking about whether the job is what you had expected it to be.
Yeah, you know, it's provided me with an opportunity to continue to serve as a public leader on issues such as employee wage theft and retaliatory employee terminations and hospital closures and fair public education access and on healthcare delivery. So it's a wonderful role. It's a great role, and we've gone to work, and we've transformed the office. We've achieved some real results within the first 100 days. Most recently, we fought for 250 working men and women of UPS. We sent a clear message that, you know, corporations can't benefit from public benefits with one hand and then mistreat and disrespect their employees with the other.
We're going to talk about UPS in just a minute.
Yeah.
I'm guessing you're glad that snow removal isn't part of the public advocate's portfolio.
Well, as the former chair of sanitation, and as someone who was involved in making sure there was snow removal in the city of New York when I was chair in the city council, and it worked very closely with Commissioner John Doherty, who did an excellent job of representing that agency. I love talking about sanitation issues. I love talking about solid waste issues, recycling issues. During my tenure, we passed in the city council a wide range of bills focusing on recycling. As you know, most recently, I co-sponsored a bill with some individuals in the city council with respect to implementing a 10-cent charge on plastic bags. We talked a lot in the committee with respect to solid waste and transfer stations and environmental justice. I don't have a problem critiquing the mayor's skills with regards to snow removal in the city of New York.
You can talk a little snow when you need to.
I do, but I also criticize the mayor when he didn't close the schools on that day too, because I believe safety should come be at the forefront of his mind.
Well, I want to tick through a number of issues, but let's ask you first what you see as your biggest accomplishment thus far.
If I would have to choose one, I guess.
Let's have you choose one. We'll talk about a bunch, but let's have you choose one as your biggest accomplishment thus far.
Long Island College Hospital.
And why that?
We scored a major win for health services in Brooklyn. We inherited a lawsuit from the former public advocate, Mayor Bill de Blasio. We went into court and we transformed the process, provided transparency and accountability, and made sure that a full-service hospital was part of the RFP process. And the successful bidder, as you know, was able to offer a full-service hospital. And now we are working with that bidder to ensure that they get past all of the regulatory hurdles and provide a full-service hospital to the residents of Red Hook and downtown Brooklyn.
Now, you know, Tish James, I'm not going to just throw you a softball and not flip the coin. So what do you see as your biggest frustration or challenge or whatever word you want to use on the other side of that accomplishment word thus far? What have you been wrangling with that you still feel is a bear for you in that first 100 days?
Trying to provide some accountability in the Queens Library system. Hmm. There's an executive director whose pay is excessive. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of transparency on the board. We put forth some recommendations with respect to having the president file a conflicts of interest form, just disclosing his income, and we got pushback. We got pushback on a wide range of recommendations to the Queen's Library Board, and it's rather unfortunate. But we're still going ahead. We're still pushing forward. I know that Melinda Katz, the Queensborough president, has put forth some legislation in Albany. I'm hoping that she is successful. We will be joining her with that. But we believe that we should go a little bit further in making sure that the Queen's Library is accountable to the public, since the vast majority of its funds are public funds.
All right. Well, it's only the first 100 days. You've got a lot of days to go on both of those, the accomplishment and the challenge. We're going to take some calls for the public advocate, and we want to know what you would like to have her focus on in the next 100 days. Call us at 212-433-WMYC, 212-433-9692. And again, I'm Jamie Floyd. I'm in for Brian Lehrer. It's my pleasure to be able to talk with Letitia James, our new public advocate. And let me begin by talking with you about some of the things Mayor de Blasio touted, the securing of funding for universal pre-K, sick day legislation, settling the stop and frisk legal battles. Those are his major accomplishments that he's talked about in his first 100 days. Would you say, Tish James, that you're on board with the de Blasio administration on all of those?
Yes. Mayor de Blasio, myself, and the controller of the City of New York, Scott Stringer, we were voted in on a wave of progressive change. And obviously, we want to move forward on change in the City of New York, responding to the needs of working class people in the City of New York, empowering individuals in the City of New York. But from time to time, I do disagree with the mayor. Most recently, as you know, I filed a lawsuit against the mayor of the City of New York with respect to forced co-locations. I'm good friends with him, and I believe in collaboration over conflict, but the administration's approval of forced co-locations was wrong, and in some cases, they're putting elementary school children with high school students. It results in there's overcrowding. We still have children in trailers. I most recently visited a high school in Queens, Richmond High School, and there's the smell of mold, poorly heated. It's a bad heating and cooling system. Most of the children in the trailers are immigrants. It's no way to treat a child. And it's and unfortunately, the learning experience leaves a lot to be desired. And special needs children, unfortunately, are not getting their mandated services in traditional public schools. And so that's why we filed a lawsuit. We have a hearing scheduled next week in civil court. And I'm hoping before these co-locations go forward that we have some standards and some metrics. And we talk a lot about building capacity. Some of these forced co-locations will allow schools to exceed 100% of their capacity. It's really unacceptable. And until such time as the task force has met and come forward with some recommendations, that task force created by Chancellor Carmen Fariña, I don't see how we can go forward with co-locations in the City of New York. I have nothing against charter schools, but I believe that all children should be taught in a learning and in an environment which is conducive to learning.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the charter school issue and drill down on that.
Sure.
There are some folks who felt that you overplayed your hand a bit in that matter. What would be your response to those folks?
I don't know what that means. All I know is that I met with Community Education Council committees all throughout the City of New York and every corner of the city, including Staten Island. We all met about maybe 2 months ago, and I wanted them to advise me as to whether or not we should file litigation. And overwhelmingly, it was unanimous support for litigation. Everyone said that the voice of parents and the voice of educators and the voice of community boards and CEC councils were ignored, and their voices have not been heard.
But then Albany got into the mix, and now, although it was a bit of a – Albany got into the mix of the matter and has taken that decision out of the city's hands, has it not?
It has, but it's still up to the courts to decide. Obviously, the legislature can enact laws, but it's really up to the courts to determine whether or not it's legal and fair, and that's why we filed litigation. And I believe that it's just not fair, and that The conversation, the narrative, has been focused on charter schools, and in particular, 194 children, when in fact there are 1.1 million children in the public, in the traditional public school system, whose voices have not been heard. And special needs children, unfortunately, are not getting their mandated services consistent with the law. Too many children are eating lunch at 9 and 10 o'clock. What about those children? Who is standing up for those children?
And we did do a segment on that a few weeks ago about precisely that issue, the lunch and the children and when they're eating and how difficult that is, especially for special needs children. What is the status of the lawsuit right now?
Yeah, there's a hearing scheduled in Supreme Court next week on the 23rd. It's scheduled for hearing. Whether or not we go forward on that day, I'm not sure. But we are scheduling a press conference on that day. Again, I'm not against charter schools. I supported charter schools in the past when I was a city council member. This is about fundamental fairness and making sure that all children are in a learning environment, in an environment which is conducive to learning. And that's what this lawsuit is really all about, fundamental fairness across the board.
All right. Next hearing scheduled, at least for now, for the 23rd. Let's take a call with our public advocate, Letitia James. We have Aaron, who's calling from the Brooklyn Navy Yard on WNYC. Go right ahead, Aaron.
Good morning, Tish.
Good morning, Aaron.
You mentioned wage theft.
Yes.
I'm a licensed home improvement contractor with the Department of Consumer Affairs, and we are licensed on ethical grounds. We are obligated to have workers' compensation insurance and pay our taxes. Payroll taxes and insurance are very expensive. I cannot compete with other contractors who do not pay their workers, right, never mind insurance and taxes. I understand from Baruch College there was a study that on Sandy recovery, 82% of the workers, never mind low safety standards, 82% reported wage theft, yet the Department of Consumer Affairs has failed to license half or more of, by their own numbers, they have failed to license half or more of the home improvement contractors. So 14,000 licensed by their own numbers, 15,000 to 20,000 unlicensed. Enforcement against unlicensed contractors who fail to pay their workers hasn't worked. Every new administration comes in and says, we're going to crack down. But what are you going to do about wage theft in my industry? And I believe my industry, home improvements, is larger than half of the entire construction industry. Our city is old. Our old buildings employ more people improving them than new construction employs people building them. And this is where the wage theft is. Other than enforcement, how are you going to address this problem?
Excellent question, Aaron, and I'm glad you asked that question. I just want you to know that we have already introduced legislation with respect to wage theft. We began a push for legislation to assist impacted workers as well as businesses overall. The bills include the ability to anonymously report wage theft to appropriate authorities with guidance from our office as part of our wage theft hotline. And so we are moving forward on wage theft. We're taking it very seriously. We would hope that you would join us in this campaign to address wage theft in the city of New York, not only for fast food workers, but also in your particular industry as well. And I thank you for the call, and I look forward to seeing you in the neighborhood.
Tish, the board is lighting up, but I have to ask a very specific question about procedure.
Yes.
As public advocate, you play a role with the city council. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that part of your job?
Sure.
And exactly how you interface with the city council? Because I think a lot of listeners may not understand how that works.
So the Office of Public Advocate, one, is second in line to the mayor of the city of New York. God forbid if anything should happen to our mayor, the public advocate becomes the temporary mayor until such time as there is an election. Two, Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito appointed me as temporary speaker pro temp, where I preside over the city council during their stated meetings. In the past, as you know, it was in the charter, but then former Mayor Bloomberg removed that responsibility. Speaker Melissa Mark-Viverito thought it was wise that I preside over the city council, and I do. In addition to that, we have introduced more legislation than any other public advocate in the past within the last 100 days, and we're going to continue to do that. I think it's really important that the city council and the Office of Public Advocate advocate, not operate in silos, and that we remove the wall of separation, and that I continue to focus on legislation, that I continue to attend hearings, that I continue to be an active part of the city council, and that I keep my ear to the ground and speak to all 51 members of the city council as to any patterns and practices that are happening in their respective district, and therefore the entire city of New York. That's why it's really critically important I continue to maintain a relationship with the city council.
Yeah, I just wanted folks to know that the public advocate doesn't operate in isolation, that the public advocate proposes bills and interfaces on a constant basis with the city council. Let's take a call from Zia, who is calling in from Queens. Yeah. Zia, you are on
Why?
WMYC.
Because you're not working.
No, I'm working. I'm working. No.
Zia? Right. Zia?
Yes.
Can you join us now on WMYC? I hear you're having a little side conversation there.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm just wondering, you know, I'm a New York City taxi driver. What happened? The CLC is charging us ridiculous fines, you know, and we are paying for one mistake three times. Like, if I...
Zia?
So it appears that he's being stopped by a light.
Yeah, Zia's having a hard time with us. Tish, but I think you're getting his point.
Yep.
It sounds like they're getting fined two and three times for the same violation. Have you heard that complaint before?
Yeah, it seems that we caught him in the middle of being stopped by an inspector. And it's unfortunate. Obviously, you know, the Office of Public Advocate, we're looking at fines not only with regards to taxi drivers, but in regards to small businesses in the city of New York. We heard from a lot of small businesses, and clearly he is a small business because he is a taxi driver. It's something that we're looking at and trying to come up with some policy recommendations as well as some legislation. And that's why it's so important that the Office of Public Advocate be embedded in the city council, because we serve as an ex officio of the city council. And it's really critically important that we take our role seriously in the introduction of legislation. And we have done just that. And we will continue to do that. And that's why so many people see me when they come to the city council. I serve on a number of committees and pop up every now and then at hearings that are relevant to New Yorkers.
Yeah, it really does seem, I mean, clearly unfair to be fined more than once for the same violation, if that is indeed
what
he was suggesting. We have Maria somewhere. Maria, I think, is in Harlem. Maria, can you join us? You're on WMYC with Tish James, if you're ready.
Hello.
Hey, Maria.
Hi. Ms. James?
Yes, ma'am.
I want to congratulate you. I didn't have enough faith in you, but you have really sailed in 1,000%.
Thank you.
I especially like what you did with the UPS.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm asking you,
mm-hmm.
please do the same for our seniors in rent-regulated apartments. We're being kicked to the ground. Okay? I saw you when you came campaigning at Canaan Senior Center. And again, I want to congratulate you. I really feel good about you.
So why didn't you have any faith in me, Maria?
You know what? It's politics. And I said, oh, God, here we go again. But you came sailing through.
Thank you, Maria.
I have to give it to you.
She's got faith in you now. So
Thank you, Maria. Let's not ask.
But she
raises a very important issue, on all jokes aside, and that is rent-regulated tenants in the city of New York, rent-stabilized, rent-controlled residents, one, are being priced out of the city of New York, two, are being asked to be downsized, and three, obviously, are not allowed to patronize or take advantage of the same amenities within market rate buildings, particularly when they exempt out of or opt out of the rent control program. And so with regards to rent control, rent stabilized tenants not being allowed to use certain amenities in buildings that are no longer rent control, rent stabilized, we filed a complaint within the Human Rights Commission. We were also introduced legislation with Councilmember Johnson to correct that. We believe it's a violation of the human rights law in the city of New York. Two, We are working with Manhattan Borough President Gail Brewer with respect to just protecting the rights of rent-controlled, rent-stabilized tenants as it relates to downsizing. We believe there should be a moratorium going forward. We recognize that downsizing is as a result of the federal government, the sequestration, the federal government turning their back on urban centers in the city of New York, not giving us the appropriate amount of resources to address the needs of individuals who want to remain in possession of their homes. And we believe that HPD, one, should issue a moratorium until there's some rules in place to protect seniors, disabled, et cetera, exempt them from downsizing. And three, I'm working with the de Blasio administration. We need to go forward with a robust affordable housing program in the city of New York. We need to reform the 80-20 program, the 421A program. We need to redefine what is affordable. Everyone asked me, including myself, what is affordable in the city of New York? We need to provide more housing for middle-income families, working families, individuals making between $20,000 and $80,000. We need to redefine area median income and address working people in the city of New York. And lastly, we need to focus on unit size. As opposed to these small units, we need to make larger units, develop more larger units for families, individuals with children in the city of New York, so that they can live and breathe and grow up to be successful adults in the city of New York. That's really critically important to me.
Well, Tish, there are so many things we did want to talk about. I'm glad Maria brought up the UPS labor dispute, because that was one of the things we wanted to talk about. We also wanted to talk about universal free lunch. Yes. And then, of course, there's the next 100 days. There are so many, many things to discuss, and we are going to have to leave it there. But I guess this means you'll just have to come back and talk with Brian.
Well, thank you, and tell all of your listeners to join me in the campaign to have universal free lunch so that all children can have free, nutritious lunch regardless of income. Go on to our website. Go on to change.org, sign our petition, and urge the de Blasio administration to join us in this campaign to offer free lunch to all children, all public school children in the city of New York. It's critical to the learning process. And I thank you for this opportunity. I look forward to coming back in the next 100 days.
Well, thank you so much, Letitia James, our public advocate. I am Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer. I have been speaking with New York City's public advocate, Letitia James, and I thank her for joining us this morning.